This is the House Labor Committee meeting in Hearing Room E at the State Capitol. It's Wednesday, March 30. It's 8 a.m.
House Labor Committee, I've come to order, please. We have a full agenda this morning. Hearing and work session. We also have a 10:30 floor session, so it's the chair's desire, and I think the members' desire, that we proceed as expeditiously as possible on the bill scheduled for work session and hearing this morning. We have added to our original agenda a couple bills which were carried over from Monday's work session, 2425 specifically, and another measure, 2493, related to utility workers' right to strike. Before we get to our printed agenda, however, I want to share with members or discuss a memo which was distributed to members, a request for an LC bill draft from the Oregon Federation of Teachers. Again, this is a request for a bill draft to Legislative Council. It's not a motion yet to introduce the bill, and this comes from the Oregon Federation of Teachers, and their request is for the draft of a bill which would require what's called just cause for dismissal of employees. The provision would apply to employees not already covered by just cause or its equivalent in a collective bargain agreement or civil service type law. The remedy for a wrongful dismissal would be arbitration. This is a matter which, to my understanding, has been proposed in other states. I'm not sure if it's been enacted in other states, but apparently the requester has asked us to consider this matter as well in terms of a bill draft. Yes, Representative Johnson.
The question, does it affect just public employees only?
No, this would apply to all employees.
All employees.
Yes. Public employees already enjoy some degree of protection.
Yeah, they do. That's why I wanted to. Committee bill, sorry.
Again, this is a bill draft. Assuming Legislative Council responds promptly, which I'm sure they will, we would then bring the draft back for introduction. Are there any comments or questions? Are there any objections to this request? If not, I'll be for the Legislative Council. Okay, the first bill up on this morning's agenda is for work session is 2512, exempting volunteer firefighters from minimum wage.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Moore.
I'd just like to, for your information, tell you that every Wednesday morning I have hotline, and we don't finish till right after 8. Eldon and myself, and I think Bob also has a hotline to our hometown. Just for your information.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. We will bear that in mind and accommodate that to the extent possible that we can. Okay, Council, could you maybe just bring us up to date on 2512 and share with us any additional information that we may have received? I understand we have received a letter in response to a question or questions which we had posed to the Labor Commissioner, and if you could share with us, members have a copy of that letter, I believe, and if you could review it with us.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for benefit of members, we have and have placed in their files a March 24, 1983 letter from Paul Tiffany, Administrator of the Wage and Hour Division of the Bureau of Labor. I have extra copies of that letter here if you're unable to find yours. The letter is in response to some questions which we posed to Mr. Tiffany after last hearing on the amendments which were offered by the proponents of the bill. I had forwarded a copy of those amendments to Mr. Tiffany and asked for his comments on the effect of the law or the bill as amended on wage and hour administration and on the status of volunteer firefighters under the current law. Mr. Tiffany's response, you can read for yourself, but just very briefly summarized, he concludes that the bill, even as amended, does not change the existing state of the law in this area, or expresses what he believes to be the state of the law already. We have, in addition, placed in members' files a number of other communications from Mr. Matt Shields and a letter from Mr. Lloyd Gardner expressing an opinion on a question, I believe it was Representative Johnson who asked if a volunteer firefighter, a career firefighter, returned as a volunteer were injured during the volunteer portion of duty, would workers' compensation be paid according to his career status or according to the volunteer compensation, if any? And Mr. Gardner's response was that the firefighter would be paid according to the rates based on his or her career portion of the wages. That is also in your files. So the bill, as it stands, there's an amendment offered with a shorter version of the original bill. I believe that's all.
Well, the I think the information that we requested has been provided in terms of the response from the Workers' Comp Department and also from the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Those responses have been made a part of the record, obviously, and I think that any record that we establish, notwithstanding any action that may or may not be taken on the bill, I think, in terms of legislative intent, if I can speak to that, is that volunteer firefighters, I guess basically we don't see volunteer firefighters, those who return as volunteers, it's not our intent to change apparently what is the existing relationship or the regard in which they're treated by the law, or at least the current interpretation by the Bureau of Labor and Industries, by any inaction that may result. It would be the chair's motion, and the chair would move to table 2512. Is there any discussion or comment? Representative Lee.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to comment, reviewing the letter from the Bureau of Labor and Industries and the answer to the five questions that were proposed, it appears that this legislation is not necessary. I think we probably ought to make that change in 2434 that they suggest, and reviewing the compensation department letter, there's no problem in the area of workers' comp. So I'd certainly agree with your suggestion to table this bill.
Okay, is there any further comment or discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Rajati?
Aye.
DeVore?
Aye.
Ford?
Aye.
Gold?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Lee?
Aye.
Shipwreck?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. 12 is tabled.
You want some other ones now?
We're moving here. Direction, I hope. Not precipitously, however. The next measure on our amended agenda, and I'm sorry I took it out of sequence, is House Bill 2425. This is a matter that was carried over from Monday. We had a request for some additional information, which has been distributed to members, and I think that was a request from Representative Johnson in terms of those employees who might be affected by this change proposed in House Bill 2425. Representative Johnson.
Could we have Mr. Demusiak and Mr. Berger come up, please?
Certainly. Gentlemen, if come forward, please.
And then I'd like to ask our counsel this information. What was the source of this information, if I may ask?
We obtained this information by calling various public employee labor organizations around the state who are listed on the chart.
And,
yes, Representative Johnson.
I don't know whether either of you had prepared information as to who's in and who's out of this bill, and are you satisfied that the bill clearly establishes who is in and who is out in the process, and I guess each of you could respond to that.
If I may first, my name is John Demusiak. I'm administrator of the Labor Relations Division. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as we have reviewed our represented state employees, there are approximately 23,623 who are represented by 10 different labor organizations. My understanding of the voluntary versus the involuntary difference in the bill is that the Oregon Education Association, which represents 73 state employees at the School for the Deaf and the School for the Blind, and the Oregon Nurses Association, which represents 1,030 registered nurses at the three mental health institutions and the Health Sciences University, would be under the mandatory or the involuntary portion of the bill. The rest of state employees, the process of voluntary fact-finding would be applicable to them. So out of a total, as I said, of 23,623, the fact-finding procedure would be mandatory for 1,103 employees.
Okay, and Mr. Berger, did you have any comments as to what your view of the rest of the public employment sector, those that would be in and out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm Kirk Berger, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, League of Oregon Cities. The major thrust of the employee groups who will remain under the current mandatory fact-finding procedure are primarily in the education area, not within cities and counties. Voluntary fact-finding will essentially be the law of the land if this bill passes for essentially all employees of cities, counties, and special districts. The one possible exception being registered nurses. There are counties that have registered nurses, and to the extent that they are represented, they will have mandatory fact-finding. One issue there, I don't believe it exists today, but there's nothing that would prevent it sometime in the future for a unit in a county public health department or a county-run hospital to conceivably have a unit of employees that would include both people who are subject to mandatory fact-finding and people who would be subject to voluntary fact-finding. It's not my knowledge now that there are any units that include both registered nurses and other healthcare professionals, but there's nothing in the collective bargaining law that would prevent that from occurring in some of these non-represented groups they at some time in the future were to organize.
Thank you. I think it's on the record of what we have, who's in and who's out in the process. That was my main concern, that we get that established there.
I appreciate that information. I also note for members' information that they have not had a chance to review it. In the bill files is a copy of the letter and some additional information that was provided by Mr. Demusiak at the request of Representative Gold in terms of a survey of state laws of other states and the extent to which they require fact-finding as part of their public employee collective bargaining process. And I won't repeat state by state, but it appears to me on the face of the survey that by far the majority of states do not require fact-finding as a mandatory part of the collective bargaining process. And I believe it was the earlier testimony which established that the federal model, if you will, does not require fact-finding. And I think this, again, has been pointed out that this bill change that's been incorporated, of course, would allow the parties voluntarily to engage in fact-finding if it were felt to be mutually beneficial. Council advises me that the amendments that were proposed were adopted, and I think that consistent with members' own recollection of the action taken on the amendments, which were distributed in the LC form on Monday.
So I'm clear. Sure, so I'm clear then. LC 2425-2 are the...
That's correct.
Those are the correct amendments to House Bill 2425. And there are no other amendments out there.
No, the only additional action in terms of an amendment would be a deletion of the requestor. At the AFL-CIO, which had originally requested the bill, had stated to us that it was their request that their designation as a requestor be removed. We had checked with legislative, the chief clerk's office, and they advised us that that was permissible under their own interpretation of the rules.
I've checked with Ann Aiken on that.
We have not taken that action. So I guess before any action on the bill, the chair would move that the requestor, at the request of the Oregon AFL-CIO, be removed from the bill 2425 at their request, and again, consistent with our interpretation from the chief clerk's office. Is there any objection to that motion? If not, they will be removed as a requester. Representative Leek?
Chairman, are you ready to hear the move for the amendments proposed?
Council has advised me that, in fact, we adopted the amendments on Monday.
And we're ready for the bill?
Yes, the chair would entertain a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of House Bill 2425 and recommend passage to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Leek,
as amended.
Let me state the motion. Representative Leek moves House Bill 2425 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation as amended. And I would consider as part of that request also that it be engrossed.
Please.
I think that'd be appropriate. Representative Johnson.
I think before votes taken, if this bill leaves this committee in its present form, what we have is a major departure from what has been a very successful public employee bargaining system. I've had the good fortune of seeing the process start from the confer and consult days to what we have today. And I just want on the record that I think this proposal and this change will probably have as much adverse impact on the people who are affected by this bill as the beneficial aspects perceived by some small segments of the public employee sector.
Thank you. Is there any other comment, Representative Leek?
Yeah, if I could just comment, Mr. Chair, if indeed members of the public sector bargaining units are adversely affected, then they may choose under this bill to engage in voluntary fact finding and relieve themselves of those adverse effects.
Just to get, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
just to get
John's
on the record, it's, this bill, as I understand it, has the effect that the employer may, as well as the employee, refuse to go through the voluntary fact-finding. It may be counterproductive for those small groups who otherwise might find themselves wanting it but unable to get it. That's my reason for saying it.
Mr. Chairman. One last comment, and that is that we hear from the public employers how crucial fact-finding is to the process, and I couldn't imagine that any of them would decline to participate.
I will recognize Representative Gold, and then I want to ask members to reserve the debate for the floor. Representative Gold.
I'm not proposing to argue it here. I would just like to do what I always do, which is look in wonderment at public employers who choose to continue to spend the money on fact-finding when the record of other states and the national scene proves that the mediation process alone is, which is at no cost to the parties involved, works. And so it's on that score, and on that score alone, which is historical record, that I have maintained this position.
Thank you. Representative DeBoer.
My turn, huh?
Yes. Everyone will get one bite.
Oh, good. I don't know how I'm going to vote on the bill on the floor. I don't have any problems with the firefighters or the police. My question comes with the other people that are included in the bill. And the way I vote today may not be the way I vote on the floor, but I do have some concern with that. I think it's a little different in the area of the firefighters and things, and if I do support the bill, it'll be just because they're in it. But I just wanted to...
Thank you. Any other comments?
I guess I should.
Certainly, Representative Shipwright.
I wrote some comments during the hearings, and it appeared to me that both sides have abused fact-finding, and it seems to me that oftentimes they'll use a fact-finder in order to figure out what their position should be. Something that in the private sector is we don't do. And I just feel if you don't know why you're there, you shouldn't be there. And the bottom line, I have to agree with Representative Gold, it's expensive and unnecessary.
Clerk will call the roll.
DeBoer?
No.
Ford?
Aye.
Gold?
Aye.
Hanlon?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Lee?
Aye.
Shipwreck?
Aye.
Brigiati?
Nope.
Springer?
Aye. Motion to adopt House Bill 2425, reported to the floor, passed as amended, to be engrossed. And the chair will carry the bill.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble.
Thank you. And thank you to those who have provided us promptly with the information we requested. Mr. Berger and Mr. Demusiak and others, we appreciate your assistance, and we sort of expect to hear from you again. Okay, now we're into our public hearing on a couple of bills relating to the firefighting professions, and those individuals who are the proponents, I'd like to ask them to come forward at this time. I understand they have a presentation they'd like to share with us. These are House Bills 2476 and 2700. Mr. Whalen.
Mr. Chairman, if we could go first with 2700.
That'd be fine.
A tap dance routine while Ray Barnwell arrives to testify on the next bill from Medford this morning. He left at 4 o'clock this morning and hopefully will arrive in the middle of my discussion. I will then, incidentally, Tom Whalen, Oregon State Firefighters Council, for the record. And I'll be testifying right now on House Bill 2700, which is the Firefighters Heart and Lung Bill. I purchased the indulgence of the chair with the promise that neither Ray Barnwell or Frank Jackson would engage in any oratory in support of the measure this morning. And they are here, or Ray soon will be here, hopefully, and we'll be able to ask any questions the members of the committee may have about the bill. House Bill 2700, as proposed by the Oregon State Firefighter Council, replaces the current disputable presumption in regard to heart and lung disabilities in firefighters to a conclusive presumption. A little background, there are two types of presumptions in Oregon law, and there are conclusive presumptions, and all other presumptions are disputable. They can be overcome by contrary evidence. We were first granted a disputable presumption by the 1961 legislature, and there was confusion in the legal community that hasn't been resolved until recently about just exactly what is a presumption. In 1977, we hoped to modify that law and make it clear, and we removed the word disputable from before presumption and provided that denial of a claim must be on the basis of medical or other evidence that the cause of the condition or impairment is unrelated to the fireman's employment. The Court of Appeals ruled, and the Supreme Court has since concurred, that that didn't modify the law. All that did was clarify it. And it simply codified what had always been the practice by way of disputing that firefighter heart and lung presumption. So it was not cleared up by that 77 legislature as we'd hoped. However, there's been a change in judicial and legislative attitude since that date. And in 1980, the Supreme Court ruled in a decision concerning a firefighter heart and lung case, and for the first time since 1898, a presumption was given its full weight as evidence in law, in Oregon law. And there was a subsequent change in the Oregon Evidence Code that further clarified that. So let me tell you what the state of the law is now.
Excuse me, Mr. Whelan. Would you happen to have the name of the case or its citation?
Yes. It was Wright versus Safe, and it went through the appeals up to the Supreme Court, was remanded to the Court of Appeals, and they then held in favor of the firefighter.
Could you furnish that to me?
If you can get the a little bit more precise identification in terms of where that is reported in the decisions of the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court,
okay.
I'm sure that the counsel will distribute a copy of that decision.
I've got the advance sheets with me, and I'll make copies and get them to Jennifer today.
Thank you.
At any rate, the state of the law is now that in cases where the death, disability, or impairment of health of a firefighter with five or more years of employment, and where that firefighter underwent a pre-employment physical that failed to disclose that condition, any subsequent condition is adverse conditions assumed, presumed to be job-related. Now, that's got to be overcome. To defeat that, it has to be overcome by medical or other testimony that show that it is not job-related. So things have improved, but we're still here asking for a conclusive presumption. Let me explain that. The answer is twofold. I explained that there are just two types of presumptions in Oregon law, the conclusive and disputable. There's nothing in between, and I guess the problem is as much medical as anything, is that there are still medical practitioners around who say that mental and physical stress don't cause heart attacks. And there's a recent case, it might be worth noting, it's Bales versus Safe, a December of 82 decision on a heart and lung case. The court had tried to say that particular theory, that stress doesn't cause heart attacks, is a thoroughly disreputable theory. And the Supreme Court reversed the Court of Appeals, who'd relied on that theory, and it was a Supreme Court theory that they'd relied on. Chief Justice Lent revised that, saying it's not the business of the court to decide what is a reputable medical theory. And it was the correct decision, I guess, but nevertheless, there are practitioners out there now that can always be produced to say that firefighting and the stresses and strains involved in firefighting don't cause heart and lung disabilities. Heart disabilities, anyway. Well, medical opinion ranges all the way from the one I just mentioned to the fact that stress is the predisposer for heart and just about every other infirmity known to man. All they need to do is provide one or two people that say firefighting did not cause this man's disability, and we've defeated a claim. The problem with knowing for sure is that these types of disabilities are endemic only to firefighters, and there's only 2,200 of us in this state, and that's out of a workforce of 1.3 million, and out of a public employee workforce of 200,000. If those large groups were experiencing these disabling injuries or diseases at the rate we were, there'd be some studies done, there'd be some money thrown at researching, finding out just what the causes are, and hopefully coming up with some cures. Unfortunately, we're just 1% of the public workforce, and we're less than 0.17%, I believe it is, of the entire Oregon workforce. So we don't really add up to a lot of interest for the medical community. So we have to extrapolate from information that's available from other sources.
Mr. Whelan, I guess, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'd like to maybe inquire at this point. You made earlier reference in your testimony to, I guess, we're not talking about pre-existing conditions, obviously. What kind of examination, physical, are people that wish to become firefighters, do they have a fairly rigorous physical examination?
Well, I can only speak for myself, and it wasn't a rigorous examination. I am going to suggest that the result of a conclusive presumption will be the administration of a rigorous stress EKG before one is accepted as a candidate for firefighter, and rule out any underlying symptoms or any underlying arterial disease.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'd just like to point out before I get into the film that the firefighter is the only class of worker in the 1.3 million Oregon employees that has no control over the workplace. We set up attack lines and move from sub-freezing to 400-degree temperatures in a matter of seconds without benefit of warm-up, without carrying very heavy equipment. And if any of you picked up a bucket of water, you know that water is not exactly a light item either. We'll be awakened in the middle of the night, ear-splitting bells going off, bright light, and we're trying to piece together fragmented information and figure out what kind of probabilities and possibilities it is we're going to run into out there. The mental stresses, dealing with victims of heart attacks, accidents, infant deaths, and their families, obviously takes its toll. That bell goes off more and more as we find firefighters' jobs. Going into the emergency medical field. So I included a report from Dr. Nathaniel Raich on firefighting and heart disease there.
Is that something that would be bargainable under the workers' comp law?
Under the State Collective Bargaining Act, I that's the first time I'd considered it when Representative Johnson posed the question. If that could be arguably fall within wages, hours, and working conditions, I suppose we could demand a bargain over it. I can just say that it hadn't occurred to me to bargain over workers' compensation laws, and I don't know of any instance where that has been proposed to be bargained over.
I doubt very much.
Okay. Any other questions? Comments? Thank you, gentlemen.
I'll see that Tom gets a copy of our fitness program and our pension act for each and every member. I asked for it. I gave you one 2 years ago.
Did you? Well,
you are tight.
I might add that the city of Salem now has a mandatory physical fitness program. We're given an hour a day. We're provided with extra cycles, rowing machines. We've got a manual on what's expected of us, and every 9 months we're given a physical fitness test, which I am one of the administrators of that. And we test for oxygen uptake, the capacity of the lungs, the heart, and also body fat. It's something that's already in effect in Salem.
Okay. Thank you. We'll look forward to receiving that information. Let me ask you, before you leave though, Mr. Whalen, did you have any additional comments on 2476? Or there
Ray Barnwell is going to carry that.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and hear the proponent on 2476, and then I'll call the individuals who have signed up on these two bills to testify. Mr. Barnwell, did you wish to add any comments on 2476?
Yeah, I just, in fact, I just got into town when I walked in the door here.
Okay.
I left Medford at 3, about 4 o'clock.
That's a good early hour.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ray Barnwell. I reside at 415 West Oak Street in Jacksonville. I represent the Oregon Fire Police Retirement Committee. House Bill 2476 was introduced to correct a grave injustice to the injured firefighter and police officers in the state of Oregon. If passed into law, all this will do is require the public employees' retirement system to honor the ruling of the Workers' Compensation Department in determining the firefighter and police officer's duty disability. When on the job injury occurs, the injured person fills out one part of the safe claim and the employer fills out the other half. The injured person submits to an examination and evaluation by a doctor or doctors selected by SAFE. If the claim is denied or determined a partial disability, the injured person can contact an attorney of their choice to go through the hearings process. The attorney fees are paid from the compensation award. If the award is not settled at the hearing, the injured person can take the case a step further to the Court of Appeals and eventually to the Supreme Court. If all goes well, the board ruling will be reversed, the injured person will receive compensation. Not injured firefighter or police officer applies for disability retirement to public employees' retirement system. The physical examination and evaluation is again required by PERS and is administered by a PERS doctor. If the PERS doctor fails to agree with the workers' compensation doctors or the courts, the injured person will be back in court proving to PERS the same case that was proven earlier to workers' compensation. We feel that once the injured firefighter or police officer has proven disability with one state agency, the other state agency should honor that ruling. On behalf of the firefighters and police officers who will be permanently injured in the future, I urge support of House Bill 2476.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Hanlon.
Thank you. Mr. Barnwell, are there other similar laws presently in effect, either federally or state-wise, where one determination is binding in another forum?
Not that I know of. The way we found that an injured person has to, time after time after time, prove the same same injury, so they're eligible with the different agencies. There seems to be a real lack of coordination between agencies, or maybe trust. I don't know just what it is. Or possibly they feel the injured person will get tired of trying to keep proving their injury. The PERS, by the way, when they have to fight on the PERS, now that's not covered. PERS does not furnish an attorney. The injured person has to furnish their own attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What kind of disability determination under workers' comp would be applicable and binding under PERS under 2476?
Well, it would be any duty disability. Now, not self-inflicted. The PERS law says, you know, that if it's a self-inflicted injury, then it's not compensable. What it would be a proven duty disability, either heart and lung, or physical, you know.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, reading here is that if a final determination under comp at the officer or firefighter is disabled, it's binding. My question of what kind, within workers' comp there are different kinds of disabilities like temporary total, permanent partial, and permanent total. And I suppose my question of you is what kind what does the word disabled mean in order to bind the PERS?
If comp determines, workers' comp determines that the injured firefighter police officer cannot return to their job as a firefighter or police officer, then when they file for a claim under PERS, they don't have to go through the same hearings to get the same determination with a different set of doctors and a different set of attorneys and, so forth.
So your answer is cannot return to that person's job as a firefighter?
Right.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
So that we could determine the extent of the problem that the proponents of the bill indicate, I'd like you to furnish the number of cases that this has occurred over the last 4 years,
I'm sure that you have it available since you're that precipitated this.
Okay. I'll do that.
Names and we'll obtain the information to find out why the dispute.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Lee.
Thank you. Mr. Barnwell, I was wondering if you, from your personal experience with firefighters who've been injured or suffered some kind of disability, what's their general attitude in terms of accepting that disability or wanting to remain on the job? Or
most firefighters would rather stay on the job.
When?
In fact, we have a hearing coming up in Medford. I think it's April 6th, of a firefighter that they were trying to put off the job with a knee injury, and he doesn't feel he's disabled. And he has done his job for several months before they finally determined, well, maybe he should be off the job. And he has retained an attorney to have a hearing to determine whether or not he is really disabled or not. And he doesn't feel he is, we don't feel he is. But the city feels he is.
So, in probably the majority of cases, then, when a firefighter has received a comp determination and is, you know, ready to accept his to apply for disability retirement and to admit that he can no longer be a firefighter, he is indeed in that, gone through quite a heavy, substantial psychological change it's kind of a last resort situation for him. I guess what I'm looking for, I'm groping around to find out, and this is one of the concerns that we have in the in disability retirements overall, is whether people are feigning disability for retirement purposes. And the testimony that we've had earlier today is the tremendous competition for firefighters.